Chapter 5. Squalla was in the middle of hashing out the quarterly expenses, technically Xanthus's job, but until the main house knew she was back, they had to maintain cover. Or so she'd said. And if it was actually because she'd never liked dealing with the budget, well, he wasn't going to say anything. When he heard the ruckus start up downstairs, he dropped his pen and bolted to his feet, adrenaline crashing the world into sharp focus and stark primary colors. He fell in at Xanthus's elbow as they raced downstairs to the source of the shouting and crashes. The old man's guardians were there in the front hall, Storm and Cloud and Rain, brawling with the bulk of 5th Squad and Levy himself. There was someone else in the hall, an interloper whose tiny figure proclaimed Arcobaleno, even though for the life of him, Squalo didn't know who that tiny cloaked figure was. Whoever it was had gotten behind their people and seemed to be the object of Gemello, Piorezza, and Martelli's attention. No one seemed to have recognized that he and Xanthus had arrived on the staircase that swept down to the hall, or that more Varia were pouring in from the rest of the building. The three geezers threw themselves at Levy and his people, struggling to break the line they held and do God alone knew what. And 5th Squad held firm, refusing to cede a centimeter of tiled floor. Xanthus got their attention by drawing one of her guns and firing a shot into the ceiling. The 9th people and 5th Squad froze at the roar of the gun. As plaster rained down on the scene, the Arcobaleno whirled and flowed up the steps to where they stood.
Xanthus of the Vongola!
She, Squalo thought, though that was only a guess, as she drew a small, flat box from beneath the muffling folds of her cloak.
I have a delivery for you.
She tossed the box Xanthus's way, as someone else, Piorezza, Squalo thought, shouted an angry protest. Xanthus caught it in her offhand, casual. Yeah? Who's it from? She asked as she flipped the catch open to look inside. There were 7 half-rings nestled inside, 6 forming a circle around the 7th, all of them sparkling against black velvet.
Guess,
the Arcobaleno said, dry as a desert. The 9th people looked like they were thinking about doing something really damn stupid, Squalo decided, looking at the strain on their faces. He took stock of who they had on the scene and gestured. Lusuria nodded and flowed left, his people fanning out with him. Kala didn't nod, but she closed in on the right, her people slipping in to fill the holes in Levy's defense. And she was smiling in the way that promised mayhem. At his feet, the Arcobaleno drew herself up to her full height.
I am charged with one other task, she intoned. Xanthus of the Vongola, the outside advisor of the family, has selected you to be his candidate for the position of Vongola Decimo. Do you accept his nomination?
Xanthus looked straight at the geezer contingent and showed them her teeth as she shoved her gun back into its holster. I do. She ran her fingers over the constellation of half-rings, drew out the sky ring from the heart of it, and slipped it onto her finger.
And do you have guardians who will hold the rings and serve as the core of your family?
The Arcobaleno continued. The 9th people seemed to have rooted in place and were staring up at the ritual unfolding above them like they couldn't believe it was actually happening. Xanthus handed the box to Squalo. He closed it and tucked it inside his jacket as Xanthus's eyes went bright with savage joy, and she said, "Yes, I do." The Arcobaleno nodded, grave, and continued,
I must inform you that your brother Enrico has been selected by Vongola Nono as his candidate. If you will not stand aside for Enrico, the law of the Vongola and the rings says that you and your guardians must meet him and his guardians in a trial for the ownership of the rings.
Her voice, piping though it was, had a certain gravity to it that seemed to suck all their attention to her.
Will you stand aside for Enrico?
Never. Xanthus said, slow and deliberate, and the 3 geezers all seemed to sigh and wilt with that. The Arcobaleno nodded.
Very well, then. The outside advisor and the ninth will meet with the Cervello to determine the place and manner of your ritual, and the Cervello will inform you of their terms.
Sounds good to me.
Xensis closed her fist and looked at the ring shining on her hand, oddly shaped as it was.
Anything else?
The Arcobaleno shook her head.
Good.
Xensis looked down at the ground floor, staring at the geezers.
Someone seems to have let some trash blow in. Clean it up, people.
That broke the spell that had been holding the three of them silent.
This can't be happening, Gemello protested. He pointed up the stairs at Xensis. The Vendicare took you.
Squalo grinned down at him, knowing his smile was sharp.
Guess they gave her back, huh? He said, drawling the words out and watching the anger flare on Purezza's face.
Yeah, the old lady was going to be a problem, no matter how this shook out. But that was how clouds were. Martelli wasn't known for being the ninth's most level-headed guardian without reason. His dark face was cold and hard, but he set hands on Gemello and Purezza's shoulders.
I believe we ought to let Timoteo know what has happened here,
he told them, drawing them backwards towards the door.
But the rings, Gemello protested.
It's too late, Purezza bit out, as the Varia kept pace with them, advancing as they retreated. The other candidate has them now. She shot a venomous look at Xensis. For all the good it'll do her.
But she can't be tenth, Gemello said, the objection almost plaintive.
She's... It's time to go, Martelli said, loud and firm, before they could all find out what Xensis was or was not. He drew his companions out, and Levy sprang forward to bar the door after him.
Squalo exhaled and got down to business.
All right, I want to know how the fuck we let enemy forces get inside the fucking building!
My fault, I'm afraid.
The Arcobaleno didn't sound particularly apologetic about it.
They were in pursuit of me and the rings and were too close to keep out when I came in.
Ha, too close, she said. Excuses, excuses. Squalo scowled at Levy anyway, because both he and his people ought to have known better than that.
Looked like they knew it now, at least, judging by the hangdog looks on their faces.
Seems like Fifth Squad needs to spend some more time training, if you ask me. And that was letting them off lightly. But hell, the case of rings was a solid weight inside his jacket, so he could afford to be a little lenient.
Don't let me catch you slacking off again.
The Arcobaleno snorted softly. Squalo couldn't see much of her expression, between the high collar of her cloak and the visor she wore, but he thought she was amused. She dusted her hands off.
I'll be going,
she announced, and turned to hop back down the steps. Mammon had come in during the commotion. When she saw him, she drew herself up short. They stared at each other for a long, silent moment, before she snorted again and went on her way, shaking her tiny head as she did, and Mammon turned away, unconcerned as a cat.
Arcobaleno, who could understand them?
Squalo shook his own head and looked to the boss, who was looking at her fist and the ring shining on her finger, and showing her teeth in a fierce smile.
What do we do now, boss?
Xensis looked up.
Hand him out and wait till it's time to go claim the other half of him.
Squalo couldn't help grinning.
Can do, boss!
He would have liked to have been a fly on the wall for the conversation where the ninth and Enrico found out who Sawada's candidate was. But the next best thing was the news Kala's squad, preternaturally good at gathering information as it was, brought them. From the sounds of it, the main house was in an uproar. The ninth wasn't speaking to Sawada and had banned all of CEDEF from his presence. His own guardians, according to Kala's report, were just as pissed. And Enrico had taken the news that he was going to have to fight Xensis badly indeed. The rumors that he'd actually fainted were probably exaggerated by at least a couple of degrees. But Squalo savored them anyway, rolling them around on his tongue like a rare wine.
while they waited for the Cervello to come and tell them the terms of the trial. A day passed, then two, without any word of the trial. Squalo was starting to get itchy about that silence when the Cervello finally showed up. God only knew how two of them got into the place, but they did, sliding right past all the security measures a team of 60-odd paranoid assassins could dream up, and waltzing into Xansus' office like they owned the place.
"Xansus of the Vongola,"
they chorused, which was possibly even creepier than the identical hair and masks across the upper halves of their faces.
"You and your guardians are charged to come to the Vongola house tonight at 8 p.m. for the trial of the rings. You and your guardians will face Enrico Vongola and his guardians in single combat for possession of the rings. If you fail to come to this trial, all your half-rings will be considered forfeit."
Xansus nodded her acceptance of that. The Cervello nodded in reply and slipped out as mysteriously as they arrived in the first place. Squalo put that aside to figure out later, when he could afford the luxury of having a fit over that breach in security, and looked at Xansus. She wasn't looking at him. She was staring into space at something only she could see, the way she did a lot these days. So Squalo held his peace and went to spread the news. He kept an eye on Xansus and her quiet mood the rest of the day, until she caught him watching her as they got themselves geared up for the coming fights. Like they were just another mission, just another job for the elite Varia. She raised her eyebrows as she checked the distribution of holsters on her hips, making minute adjustments to the angle of her belt. Squalo shrugged at her. "Nothing, really." Nothing he could put into words easily, anyway. Though there was a part of him made uneasy by her silence, and the thought of the coming fight. Which was strange. He'd been anticipating this day and the prospect of Enrico fucking Vongola's death for months now. Xansus looked back at him, her eyes dark, things moving in them like the creatures that swam in deep water, mysterious and unknowable. At length, she returned her attention to her guns, checking the action of the slides and inspecting the magazines. "You worry too much." Squalo surprised himself by saying, "Considering the shit that Enrico and Salvatore have pulled off so far, I'm not sure I worry enough." But then, it was true, wasn't it? They'd done so much that it couldn't come down to something as easy as a set of one-on-one fights like this, could it? Xansus huffed faintly and holstered her guns. "Maybe. You ready?" There was only one possible response for that. "When you are, boss." She accepted that as her due, which it was, and they went to round up the others. The trip up to the main house was quiet, the way traveling to a job always was, and went by too fast for Squalo to pay attention to it. Not that he had much attention to spare for anything but the woman at the head of them, her hips moving with every long stride and her head held high, just the way it should be. She didn't even falter when she walked into the main house and was greeted by the hostile stares of the staff and underbosses gathered there. "I'm here for the ring trial," she announced, clear and firm, and waited. And waited a little longer, until one of the Cervello showed up, anonymous and indistinguishable from the two who'd shown up earlier in the day to announce the coming trial. "This way, please." At least part of the past couple of days of waiting seemed due to the way someone had turned one of the gardens at the rear of the place into a field, a level arena surrounded by walls and a pair of spectator areas, lit by a string of floodlights overhead. The Ninth's people were already there, filling one of the areas reserved for the spectators. The old man's guardians surrounded him, and Squalo liked to think that the old man didn't look very good, exhausted and careworn maybe, or like a man confronted by a living nightmare. He all but flinched when Xansus cast one look his direction, and then looked away from him. Frederico's people were there too, which Squalo supposed he should have expected. They stood in a tight cluster apart from the Ninth's people, huddled around a single man at the core. Fidel Rizzo, the man whose testimony had damned Xansus. He glared at Xansus now,
the look in his eyes making Squalo's fingers itch for the grip of a sword and the ability to end a clear threat to his boss. Xanth has ignored them altogether, because all her attention was focused on the third group of people, the group that contained Enrico and Salvatore. And she was smiling. But Squalo could tell that there wasn't anyone at home behind that smile. Well, not anyone fully sane. From the way Enrico was pale and his people were crowded close around him, they could tell too. The one group of people, or at least the one person who wasn't there, was Sawada, which must have meant that what Kala's squad had reported about the Ninth's injunction against the CEDEF must have been true. It meant that there wasn't anyone else in the other little spectator area to stand up for them, but Squalo guessed that figured. It always had been Xanthus against the rest of her family, and the only person who'd ever even sort of stood in her corner with her was dead now. Maybe it signified something that Massimo wasn't there to watch, or maybe it didn't. He couldn't make up his mind which it might be. One of the Cervellos stepped forward, precisely at the stroke of 8. "The two heirs are present," she announced, formal as a priest at Mass. "The trial of the rings will now commence. Each holder of a Vongola half-ring will meet the holder of its other half in this arena, and will fight each other upon our mark. The winner of each fight will be rewarded the loser's half of the ring. Any outside interference in the battle will mean the immediate forfeit of one's half-ring, as well as the half-ring of the one interfering." She paused, turning her gaze first to Enrico, and then to Xanthus. "Do you understand and accept these terms?" "Yes," Xanthus said, her voice harsh. Compared to that, Enrico's, "Yes, I do," was far less steady. "The terms have been accepted," the Cervello intoned. "The trial will begin. Holders of the Cloud Half-Rings, please come forth." Lusuria whistled near soundlessly as Kala detached herself from them. At the same time, the burliest member of Enrico's little group stepped forward. "God, are they in for a bad first match or what?" Enrico's cloud, Faoli, one of the ones Squalo never met personally, but who their intel said preferred hand-to-hand, and whose prize fighter's stance showed it, didn't seem to agree.
"Is this really fair?"
he boomed as Kala entered the ring across from him, her steps light and soundless.
"Putting a little girl like that up against me."
Sera sighed. "So much for that one." Lusuria snickered. Kala didn't say anything as Faoli entered the arena with her, just stood with her hands resting lightly on the pommels of her daggers, and no expression at all on her face. Either Faoli hadn't done his own homework on the Varia, or he just hadn't taken it seriously, because he kept going, digging himself in deeper.
"If you want to forfeit right now, honey, feel free. No one will think worse of you for it."
The Cervello stepped out of the ring when Kala didn't reply.
"You may begin."
Faoli cocked his head, looking Kala over.
"Well," he said as he cracked his knuckles, "what's it gonna be? I'd feel awful smashing up a pretty little thing like you."
Kala struck, dropping into motion between one heartbeat and the next, her wickedly curved daggers appearing in her hand like a conjurer's trick. For such a big man, Faoli was light on his feet. He leapt back and swore in surprise as she laid a cut open on his forearm.
"Why, you little bitch!"
Kala danced away from him as he turned on her, swinging his fists for her face and ducked in close again, slipping a dagger along his thigh and another across his ribs. The cuts were shallow ones, though they bled well enough and didn't slow Faoli down. He dropped into a crouch, bringing his fists up to guard against her.
"Is that really the best you can do, honey?"
he asked as they circled each other.
"I've hurt myself worse shaving."
Kala didn't say anything to that, either. But then, she didn't have to. The fey curve of her smile said it all for her, and so did the blood shining on the edges of her blades. Not that Faoli recognized that yet. Faoli feinted left and dropped his right hand into a blow that Kala spun away from. He snorted as she did,
What's the matter? Don't you want to get a little closer and try to stick me again?
Kala slipped back and tilted her head to the side, regarding him. No, she said. I don't need to.
What? Faoli's forehead wrinkled as he tried to figure out what that meant. I don't.
He coughed then, raising his hand to his throat, and the look on his face would have been funny if Squallow hadn't known precisely what it meant. Kala stepped back as he coughed again. I mean that you're already dead.
Faoli's eyes widened as he began scrabbling at his throat in earnest, his face flushed, going red and then purple. Kala stood back, watching him, her mouth curling into a smile as he staggered sideways and went to a knee, gurgling, before falling over to thrash against the grass. She didn't stop smiling until his heels had finished drumming the ground, which was when she stepped forward to slide one dagger between his ribs to make sure of him and yank the ring off his neck. The Cervello broke the silence as Kala wiped her daggers off on Faoli's shirt.
The winner of the cloud battle is Kala of the Varia.
Xanthus didn't do anything more than smile faintly as Kala stepped back out of the arena. But then, Kala wasn't the sort who needed pats on the back to encourage her. Meanwhile, across the way, Enrico and his guardians looked torn between outrage and fear. After a moment, Enrico spoke up.
That can't be right, he tried. She just... Poison should be cheating!
The Cervello, who seemed to be in charge of arbitrating the trial, spread her hands. Both candidates for the 10th have agreed to the terms as they stand. Her voice was nearly toneless. There are no restrictions in place on the weapons that may be used in the individual trials. If that meant she thought Enrico was an idiot, Squallow couldn't tell, though he did think that some of the geezers, the 9th included, looked faintly ashamed by the protest. Well, they ought to be. That was their candidate who was showing himself to be an idiot and a coward. It also suggested that Enrico's people really didn't have any idea what they were up against. Stupid of them, really. Who else was the boss of the Varia going to choose for guardians but members of the Varia? Squallow only realized that he was grinning when Lusuria nudged him in the ribs with an elbow. Stop that. You're scaring the opposition. I want them scared. Squallow focused his grin on Tirotta, Enrico's rein, who was looking grim. Not that scared, you don't. How am I going to fight someone who's too terrified to move? Lusuria retorted as a pair of the Cervello dragged Faoli's body out of the arena. You'll think of something. Then Squallow quieted himself as the lead Cervello stepped forward again. At least, he thought it was the same one. It was hard to tell with them. The ring trial will continue now, she said. Will the holders of the Sun half rings please come forward? Oh, good, Lusuria muttered. I get to go before you scare them all away. He straightened his shoulders and sashayed forward, practically swinging his hips like a woman. Squallow wasn't sure Lusuria's favorite head games were going to do him much good. Capolino had seen Lusuria in meetings, and probably knew better than to assume that this sudden onset of flamboyance was all there was to his counterpart. Capolino entered the ring after Lusuria, the long features of his narrow face drawing themselves out even longer as he sized Lusuria up. He twitched when Lusuria struck a hip-shot pose and looked him up and down, pouting. So you're going to be my dance partner tonight? Pity, he sighed. You're way too old for my tastes. Then he shook his head. Needs must, I guess.
What the fuck?
Capolino said, sounding as confused as he looked. Lusuria raked his eyes over Capolino again, appraising him frankly. You, he drawled. Normally I like him young and sweet, but I guess I can't be too picky tonight. He rolled his head on his neck, loosening up his shoulders and shaking out his hands. But maybe you'll look pretty enough when you're dead, huh? Won't matter too much, then. You may begin when ready, the Cervello said, as Capolino sputtered and choked on the implications of that.
Lusudia grinned and bounced on his feet as the Cervello stepped out of the arena. "Come on," he cooed. "Let's dance, sweetie. Sooner we get started, the sooner I can get to the good part." "I've always wondered," Sera said, voice pitched low enough that it only hit friendly ears. "Does he really do the necrophilia thing, or is that just part of his shtick?"
"I decided a long time ago that I was happier not knowing,"
Mammon replied as Lusudia began to move, dancing around Capolino with the speed that made facing him in a sparring match such a fucking pain.
"Helps me sleep better at night."
Capolino was supposed to favor the gun. He'd managed to fumble it out and was trying to aim at Lusudia, but seemed to be having some trouble with that. "Why won't you hold still, you freak?" he demanded, firing off a shot that went well wide of where Lusudia actually was. "Aw, now, what fun would that be?" Lusudia twisted out of the way of another shot. He must have seemed like he was in a dozen places at once from Capolino's perspective, who certainly wouldn't have had the time to get used to how fast Lusudia's footwork could be, and wasn't used to the shit Lusudia talked in the ring. All the depraved promises he made about what he was going to do to Capolino once he was down and out. It showed in the way Capolino's hands were already shaking, and his face gleamed with sweat. When Lusudia brought himself in and swiped a kick at Capolino that knocked the man halfway across the arena, Capolino panicked, emptying the rest of his bullets in a wild spray of shots that didn't hit anything at all. Lusudia laughed as he did. "Now that's what I'm talking about," he pronounced, positively gleeful about it, and pounced on Capolino, fists and feet flying before Capolino could even begin to think about reloading. "He shouldn't play with his food so much," Cavillo said as they watched. "It's unattractive." The Squallow didn't quite agree, but then he was watching the faces of their counterparts as Lusudia reduced Capolino to so much meat. What he saw there made satisfaction curl in his chest, warm and sweet. The ninth and his people looked sick, and Enrico was nearly green. "Good," he thought, darting a glance at the still, intent look on Xanthus's face as she watched what was going on with the trial. It didn't change anything that had happened, but maybe it made up for some of it. When Lusudia had finished with Capolino, there was nothing left of the man that was recognizable. Lusudia retrieved the ring from the body's neck as the Cervello announced his victory and all but bounced his way back over to their side of the ring. "Two down, boss," he announced as Kala passed him a towel for his hands. Xanthus grunted, inclining her head. "Yeah, good job." Lusudia beamed at her. "My pleasure, boss." Across the way from them, the ninth raised his hand to beckon the Cervello to him. He spoke to them quietly, moving his hands through the air to emphasize whatever point he was making. They listened intently, heads bent to catch his words, and nodded once he'd finished. "The ninth wishes us to emphasize that the rules do not require these trials to be to the death," their spokeswoman said, as she returned to the ring and her companions cleared Capolino's body. "A clear victory over one's opponent is sufficient." "What, really?" Xanthus's voice cut through the night, only calm on the surface. "It's come to this, and you think we can settle it with anything less than blood?" She spat on the grass and jerked her head at the Cervello. "Let's get on with it." The Cervello seemed to hesitate a moment. Did she glance to the place where the ninth sat, looking like a man caught in a private hell? And then said, "Will the holders of the Storm Half-Rings come forward?" Cavillo then, and Suretti from Enrico's side. Suretti was supposed to be a swordsman. Squallo studied him and the saber he carried and concluded that Cavillo shouldn't have too much trouble with him. Provided she held up her end of the bargain, of course, and fought for Xanthus. God only knew whether her erratic mood would support that or drive her to something else, though, was the thing. Squallo was mostly sure of her, but only mostly. "You may begin when ready," the Cervello announced as she stepped back. Cavillo dropped her bolas into her hand, sending them spinning, and fixed her eyes on Suretti's face. Suretti had seen enough of them so far to have learned to be cautious. He dropped into a crouch, saber angled across his body in defense, and his round face set and clearly afraid of her and what Xanthus had just said. He and Cavillo stood still, watching each other, until Cavillo took a step forward and let the bolas fly. He was good enough to read the attack and elude it, dodging to the side to keep the bolas from entangling him, but he wasn't good enough to have seen the knife Cavillo had dropped into her palm while he was watching the bolas. It caught him in the throat, sinking into the hilt, and he dropped where he stood. Squallow exhaled in private relief. Self-interest had won out over the opportunity for a double-cross. As Cavillo went to retrieve her knife and the other half of her ring from Suretti's body, sauntering out of the ring before the Cervello had even begun to announce her victory. That was one less thing he had to worry about, at least. Cavillo smirked at Xanthus and got a bare dip of Xanthus's chin in reply. But that seemed good enough for the both of them. So, 3 for 3 now. Squallo edged himself closer to Xanthus and inclined his head towards her. What do you think, boss? She didn't take her eyes away from Enrico or his dwindling circle of cronies. I think it's been easy so far. Yeah, he kind of thought so too. Think they have something up their sleeves? He was betting on it, just from the calm way Salvatore was watching the Cervello carry bodies off the field. Those were supposed to be his fellow guardians, the ones who would stand with him at the core of Enrico's family. But he was watching them die as if they were no more than an amusing diversion. Yeah, she said, they have to. The question of just what Enrico and Salvatore were planning remained unanswered and unanswerable and itched somewhere under Squallow's skin. Once the field was clear, the Cervello announced the next battle, lightning versus lightning. Levi stepped forward, eager as a dog on the hunt. His counterpart, Bucalo, went much more slowly. Squallo thought Enrico might actually have shoved him forward in order to get him moving. Bucalo rallied once he was in the ring, as Levi began unstrapping his parabolas. "What are you going to do, beat me to death with umbrellas?" he asked, incredulous. "Christ, this is how I'm going to die. Really?" Levy's back went stiff, but he carried on with what he was doing. It probably did look ridiculous to anyone who didn't know exactly what kind of destruction Levi could call down when he put his mind to it. And hell, if Bucalo was too caught up in his own despair and disbelief to go at Levi before he got things arranged to his satisfaction, well, maybe he deserved everything he was about to get, because some part of him was already dead. The rest of him followed in short order, accompanied by the crack of lightning and the crawling feeling of electricity raising all the hair on Squallow's body, with the scent of ozone and burnt flesh, and Levy's blinding grin when Xanthus grunted, "Good job," to him, after the Cervello affirmed his victory. And that was 4 rings out of 4 that they held now, a simple majority, which Squallow supposed made them the winners by default. They didn't have the Sky Ring yet, which was the real trial as he understood it, and made the battles for the rain and mist nothing more than formalities. Given the tension winding through him, anticipation for the trap that Salvatore and Enrico had to be planning, humming through him, Squallow wasn't at all surprised when the next trial the Cervello called for was the rain. The night air was cool on his teeth when he stepped into the arena to face Tirotta, and the things he knew about his opponent were already ticking through his brain. More of a doer than a thinker, right-handed, used a gun, and was reasonably competent with it. Tirotta's face was white, his expression set, not resigned or despairing the way Bucalo had been before Levi's lightning had crawled down to end him, but bleakly determined. Huh, looked like Enrico had found at least one halfway competent guardian, because Tirotta looked like he was determined to sell his life for his boss as dearly as possible. Squallow thought a little bit about how he was going to handle his trial, Whether he'd vent some of his rage he'd been reining in for so long on Tirotta or not. But the look in Tirotta's eyes decided him otherwise. There were better targets for that. The Cervello said, "You may begin," and Tirotta moved, drawing and firing in a single smooth motion. Squallo grinned as he threw himself out of the way of the shot, his blade singing through the air as he twisted out of the way of Tirotta's shots and counted off bullets. 1, 2, 3, and let the world fall away. 4, 5, till there was nothing left but him and Tirotta. 6, 7, 8, and the knowledge, 9, 10, that only one of them was going to leave this space. 11, alive. 12, 13. He pushed himself forward, drawing on all the speed he possessed, and came up under Tirota's guard to drive his sword up just so, angled between the man's ribs to slide through lungs and heart and punch out through his back. Tirota's breath sighed out of him, and his eyes met Squallow's. Squallow held them, accepting the man's resignation and anger as his weight folded around the blade, until the light had gone out of them altogether. He eased Tirotta off his blade and to the ground and stooped over him to close his eyes. "Someday it'll be you, so respect your opponents," one of his earliest teachers had told him, before retrieving Tirotta's half of the rain ring. Xanthus's mouth was tight when Squallo rejoined her and the others. Squallo tipped his head to the side, checking in with her, but she shook her head at him. Well, if she didn't want to talk about it, he wouldn't try to make her. Instead, he settled for fitting the two halves of the ring together. They went together so seamlessly that he couldn't see where the join was once they'd sealed together again, and looked at Mammon, who was already stepping forward in anticipation of the call for the mist battle. Which is why it was so surprising when the Cervello said, loud and clear, "Now we will have the trial for the Sky Ring. Will the candidates for the position of Vongola Decimo please come forward?" Squallo whipped his head up as all his instincts screamed. This was it. This was where Enrico and Salvatore were going to make their move. Though he didn't see how yet. Enrico was the color of paste, his face so damp it shone in the lights strung over their heads. But Salvatore was smirking, not even trying to hide that this was their moment to act. Xanthus stepped forward, her expression gone calm and still despite the blazing light in her eyes. The people on the other side, the ninth skeezers and Frederico's guardians, stirred and whispered, nothing loud enough to be intelligible from where Squallo was standing, but the sound of it grated on Squallo's nerves. She entered the arena silently and took the center and folded her arms across her chest to wait for her putative brother to join her. One part of Squallo was devoted wholly and solely to watching her. Another was monitoring Enrico and Salvatore. But the rest of him was watching the ninth and his people, tracking the fear and sorrow on the old man's face, and the hostility showing on the faces of his people, even though they looked in askance at how reluctantly Enrico's feet dragged him into the ring. Squallo smiled in spite of himself at that, because he'd thought that all Enrico's aggressiveness had been the posturing of a coward. Now the other Vongola could see it too, and he hoped they choked on it. Xanthus smiled, peeling her lips back from her teeth, when Enrico finally joined her. "Do you know," she said, her tone almost conversational, "I've been looking forward to this."
"Of course you have, you crazy bitch!"
Enrico pulled himself up, standing as tall as he could manage, and glaring at her, managing to keep his voice from shaking somehow.
"You weren't satisfied with just one of us, were you? After this, are you going after Massimo? Make a clean sweep of it?"
"Why would I do that?" Xanthus rested her hands on the grips of her guns, her flame already beginning to light her eyes. "He's not the one who killed Frederico, is he?"
"You want the one who did that? You might as well shoot yourself and put yourself out of our misery."
Enrico scoffed.
"It would be a mercy for all of us. Rabid dogs shouldn't be let to roam the streets."
His lip curled.
"Even if that is your native setting."
The Cervello cleared her throat then. "You may begin when you're ready." They both ignored her, Xanthus's flames were beginning to crackle around her hands, but she made no move to draw. Not yet. I may be a rabid dog, she said, voice filling with the promise of wrath to come, but at least I'm not a fratricide. She paused. Yet. Enrico managed to laugh, unsteady and short, even as his own flame began to gather in his hands.
Are you still insisting on that story? He mocked her. Do you really expect us to believe that you're innocent? Really? When your so-called guardians just murdered 5 decent, honorable men in cold blood? You really are as crazy as I always thought you were.
His smile turned sharper.
I suppose we shouldn't have expected anything else from you. You are your mother's daughter, after all.
Squallow found himself growling. Lusuria dropped a hand onto his shoulder and gripped it. Steady, he said softly. She has to fight this one herself.
That doesn't mean I have to like it, Squallow hissed, taut with how badly he wanted to eviscerate Enrico for the things he was saying, and then wade in the blood of all the people he could see whose expressions mirrored Enrico's words.
Xanthus's flames surged higher, crackling around her hands. I do expect you to believe me, she said, her voice gone icy. Because I might be the crazy whore's daughter, but at least I'm not a fucking liar like you. And she still wasn't drawing, wasn't attacking, though every line of her body was trembling with how tense she was. It seemed to confuse Enrico that she hadn't attacked yet. He looked thrown by her restraint, briefly uncertain. Then he regrouped and laughed, short and caustic.
You even admit what you are! And you think the Vongola would ever accept you as the 10th? Even if you kill me, it'll never stand, you know. Father will never let you hold this family. Even if he would, the family would never stand for it.
He smiled.
Face it, Xanthus. You're not one of us, and you never will be, and you know it.
Xanthus's voice sounded almost remote as she said, That's all right by me. If you're what the Vongola is, I don't want anyone to mistake me for one of you. I have more self-respect than that. Then she smiled, sudden and savage. But at least I'll know that you won't be the 10th, despite all the things you've done to get your hands on the Sky Ring. You'll never have the Sky Ring, because you're even less worthy of it than I am. The only way you'll ever be 10th is over my dead body.
If that's how it has to be,
Enrico bit out, his voice gone suddenly hard, and finally went for his throwing knives, snapping the first of them, wreathed in a haze of sky flame, at her. Xanthus's smile stretched across her face as she brushed it out of the air, knocking it aside with one negligent swipe of her gun. It is. She launched herself at Enrico with her flame blazing around her hands, burning so high that it trailed after her like the tail of a comet. Enrico threw himself out of the way, a line of blazing knives leaving his hands as he rolled across the ground and back to his feet. Xanthus eluded them with a fluid twist of her body and fired a scorching blast of flame that seared past Enrico and dug a trench in the earth to his left. Squallow frowned at that. There was no way she should have missed that shot unless she'd chosen to. What was she doing? Enrico twisted away from the path her flame had taken and used the cover of that movement to sling another knife at her, which came screaming in low and fast. Xanthus swept her hand around, flame crackling around it, and knocked the knife aside as she sprang forward, firing again. This blast went just a bit wide as well, missing Enrico's head by the barest of margins. He laughed, short.
What's the matter, Xanthus? Are you out of practice? Didn't the Vendicare let you train while you were in their keeping?
His smile went ugly.
Or did they find something else for you to do instead?
How about you visit the Vendicare and see for yourself? Xanthus snarled as she knocked the next two knives out of the way. Enrico smiled.
How do you know I didn't?
The sound Xanthus made, a snarl of pure fury, cut through Squallow. He'd taken a step forward before he'd even realized it, It was only Lusuria's fingers digging into his shoulder that kept him from diving into the arena to help the boss silence that slimy little toad forever. Zera stepped forward too, coming around his side and taking his other shoulder. "Let her have him," she said, low. "Some things a girl has to do for herself." Squallow growled and clenched his fists, enraged by how helpless he was to stop Enrico from saying those things, from smirking at Xanthus as she snarled and fired on him again and again. The only comfort he had was that Enrico had to scramble to avoid those shots, which wiped some of the sneer from his face.
"Did I touch a nerve?"
he asked, panting, and drew another knife that he held low before him, building his flame around it in a way that didn't make any sense.
"Seems like maybe I did."
Xanthus snarled again, wordless, but Squallow could see the moment when she hauled herself up short, restraining her temper again. "That's what you like, isn't it?" she spat, her mouth twisting around the words. "Finding the things you can say that slide the knife in. You're too much of a coward to attack someone openly, so you cut them to death with your words instead."
"I'm the coward?"
Enrico asked, still building up that flame around his knife. What was he going to do? Try to match the boss on sheer strength by betting everything on one shot? Surely he had to know better than that.
"You are the one who can't stand to listen."
She thrust her guns back into their holsters and raised her hands. "All the things you say are poison." Her flame was building around her hands, like she'd decided to do things the old-fashioned, hands-on way. "I'm..." Enrico interrupted her.
"Let me show you how I've trained while you were away," he said, and flung the knife, sky swirling around it.
Xanthus raised her hands, blasting her own flame back at him, the wave of it nearly incandescent. Squallow held his breath, seeing the relative strength in that wall of flame, so much more powerful than the pitiful little blast that Enrico had wrapped around his knife. Surely it would meet Enrico's flame and absorb it, then envelop Enrico and sweep him right off the face of the earth. But it didn't. Enrico's knife punched through Xanthus's flame, snuffing it out like a candle, and struck Xanthus herself. The knife glanced off her shoulder, but the flame coalesced around her as her expression changed from one of fury to shock and hardened all at once with a chiming, crystalline sound. The only sound in the moment after that was Enrico's harsh breathing as he lowered his hands and satisfaction spread across his face like an oil slick. Squallow felt as frozen as Xanthus, stuck still with the shock of that impossible ice, which wasn't supposed to happen. Wasn't like any kind of attack he'd ever seen. This couldn't be happening. Couldn't be real. "No," he breathed, barely conscious of breaking away from Sara and Lusuria's restraining hands. "No, no, fucking no!" There was steel in his hands, because he wasn't going to let them do this. He wasn't going to let them just kill her and walk away from it. Not this time. Not while he had breath left in his body. The Cervello stepped forward. "The winner of the sky battle," she began. Squallow could barely hear her over the roaring in his ears, but he stopped short as she did, when the sound, like the crack of a gun, interrupted her. She paused, startled, and looked at the pillar of ice encasing Xanthus's body. There was a crack in it, over Xanthus's hands. Enrico went white.
"Finish it!" he all but shrieked. "Finish what you were saying!"
Another cracking sound cut across his words as another fracture appeared in the ice, this time over Xanthus's brow, as the one over her hands turned deeper. The Cervello hesitated, her mouth hanging open, as Enrico nearly danced in place on the turf in his haste and fury. "The battle?" The sound that followed was the furious sound of 1,000 pieces of ice shattering all at once, as the ice that held Xanthus flew apart, the shards of it sublimating into a haze that surrounded her body from immediate view. Someone, he didn't even know who, swore as it did, startled and amazed, and Squallow only realized he was holding his breath when that haze dissipated in the little swirl of breeze and revealed Xanthus standing at the heart of it, her shoulders heaving and her face blank with shock. The Cervello shut her mouth and stepped back out of the ring. Enrico howled.
What does it take to fucking stop you?
He fumbled for his belt of knives and flung two at her, one after another, not even bothering with his flame.
What kind of monster are you?
Xanthus was slow to move, her expression still dazed, and one of those knives sank into the flesh of her arm. What? She said, her voice thick. That was... Enrico didn't seem to have heard her.
What does it take?
He demanded again as he flung another knife at her. This one sliced across her thigh.
Why won't you just disappear already?
Xanthus shook her head, something in that penetrating her confusion. Not while I still have a job to do, she said, her voice still slow. She reached up, pulled the knife out of her shoulder, and used it to knock the next one away from her as she began to advance on him.
A job to do? He groped for the next knife. What job? All you've done is shame the Vongola since the day Father plucked you out of the gutter.
A job. Her voice was stronger. The first haze of flame was starting to show around her hands again. I have a job and I'm going to see it done, and you're standing in my way. She launched herself at him then, all her usual grace stolen away by whatever that ice had been, and she ignored the knife that Enrico sliced across her shoulder when she seized on him. He twisted in her grip, struggling against the hands she'd closed on his shoulders, until she snarled at him, no words in it. She threw him down hard enough that he bounced a little, and the breath whooshed out of him. Xanthus dropped herself on him then, landing on top of him and pinning him with a knee against his chest. The ninth storm, Piero Gelmo, had trained all of his children and done it well. Enrico still went for one of his knives despite her weight on his chest. Xanthus snarled at him again as she grabbed his wrist and banged it against the ground until something cracked in it and the knife fell from his fingers. Enrico howled at the injury, and she released his wrist to smash a fist into his jaw instead, again and again, until his howls had changed into gurgling sobs, and he was flailing at her shoulders, trying to stop her. Xanthus closed her hand on his collar, fisting the cloth in her grip and hauling him up as she stood. She held his bloody face to hers.
"Why did you do it?"
she demanded, shaking him like a terrier might shake a rat. "He was better than the rest of us put together." She shook him again. "Tell me why you did it." Maybe Enrico had forgotten there were witnesses, or maybe he hoped that telling her would save his sorry life, or maybe he was beyond the point of caring.
"Because it should have been me,"
he gasped, blood flying with every word.
"I was the oldest, and I deserved to be the 10th, but everyone treated him like the second coming of Giotto. It should have been me."
Rage colored every word in spite of the beating he'd taken.
"He didn't deserve it! He would have made the Vongola even weaker! He was happy to let mongrel bastards like you into the family, and God only knows what he would have done once Father died!"
There was shock spreading in the other spectator area. The Geezers and Frederico's people all in a flutter as Enrico confirmed what Squallo and Xanthus had told them from the start. Squallo kept half an eye on them, storing up the looks on their faces to tell the boss about later, and one eye on Salvatore, who should have looked more distraught that his and Enrico's plots had started unraveling. But he was smiling, which put a cold feeling at the pit of Squallo's stomach. He gestured at the rest of them and saw Lusuria nod. Xanthus's people spread out under Lusuria's hand signals, fanning out and poising themselves to make a grab for Salvatore if he tried to make a run for it. In the arena, Xanthus was staring at Enrico, some strong emotion twisting her face.
"That?" she said. "You killed my brother for that?"
Enrico's smile was vicious in spite of the blood gleaming on his teeth.
"I did, and he thought it was you. He died on his knees thinking the mongrel bitch he loved so much was the one who pulled the trigger."
Squallo saw Xanthus suck in a breath, her shoulders heaving with it, and her hands ignited. Her flame blazed so high that it left black spots dancing across his vision as she raised her free hand and closed it on Enrico's face. When she unleashed that flame, there was a wet, cracking thud. Enrico's body jerked once and went limp. Xanthus tossed it aside and turned from it, not even bothering to retrieve his half of the sky ring. Her flame was still blazing, and there was death in her eyes. There was an almighty ruckus in the stands, geezers shouting and the old man white in the center of them. But Xanthus ignored all of that as she stalked forward, making a line for Salvatore. He held up his hands, spreading them wide, and said,
"Now wait just a moment here.
You helped him kill my brother." Xanthus's voice was as empty and cold as an Arctic ice field. She drew a gun and raised it. The shot that roared out of it when she pulled the trigger was full of sky and wrath and hit Salvatore like a sledgehammer. Salvatore's body flew backwards, its chest a smoking ruin, and skidded across the grass. And that was it. They were done. Something rose out of Salvatore's body like a miasma, dark and vaguely human-shaped. It resolved into something like a human's figure as people, Varia and Geezer alike, cursed and crossed themselves. Squalo didn't recognize the face of the figure it took, which wasn't a thing like Salvatore's. But from the sounds of it, some of the geezers did. The spirit or ghost or whatever it was laughed, the sound of it as insubstantial as the translucent epaulets on its, his, shoulders, or the long sweep of its hair. "You really didn't need to go that far," he said. It was almost like he was chiding Xanthus. "Poor Mateo wasn't really responsible. You might have spared him." Cavillo went for her holdout gun and fired on the shade. The bullets passed through it with no effect. Xanthus, meanwhile, stared at the ghost and demanded, "What the fuck are you?" It was one of the geezers who supplied the answer. Staferi, the old man's mist.
"Demon Spade,"
he said, with a little gesture to ward off evil.
"Giotto's own mist."
So it was a ghost then, who bowed to them all with a flourish, the gesture mocking.
"I see my legacy lives on," he noted,
though the name didn't ring any bells for Squalo.
"But now that my work here is done, I'm afraid I must be going."
Even as he spoke, he was beginning to fade, dissolving at the edges.
"What work?"
Xanthus ground out. Her flame glowed around her hands as she dropped her gun back into her holster.
"What work are you talking about?"
Spade smirked.
"The same work I've always done, of course. Serving the Vongola and keeping it strong."
He smiled, the curl of it sharp as a knife.
"And you will be strong. Stronger than any of your brothers dreamed of being. Strong enough to hold this family the way it was meant to be."
The sound Xanthus made at that made people step back. Even the ones who were nowhere near her.
"You son of a bitch!"
Her flame blazed out from her hands, slamming down on him, probably more out of her fury than any expectation that it would be more effective than Cavillo's bullets had been. Spade twisted himself away from the flames nonetheless, only to stop short when chains lanced up from the ground and wrapped themselves around his wrists and ankles. His surprise could have been comical.
"What?"
Then Xanthus's flame slammed into him and seized him, and he writhed against them.
"You dare!"
"This world has no place in it for ghosts."
Mammon's voice was quiet. There was a pacifier lying against his chest, glowing indigo. He gestured as Spade struggled against the chains. Mist chains, of course, because anything a mist user could imagine could be real, provided their will was strong enough to back it. "Why not chains to hold a ghost?"
"Go ahead, boss. Hit him again."
Xanthus snarled and lashed at Spade again, flames blasting out of her hands. He howled in protest.
"Stop this! You should be grateful, you stupid woman! Think of the things I've made possible for you! Think of the place you've claimed!" "You killed my brother!"
she roared in reply, bringing both hands together and building an inferno between them. I don't want the things you've done for me. I want my brother back. You don't... The ghost twisting in Mammon's chains began. But Xanthus didn't give him the time to say anything else. She lashed that furious bolt of flame at him and held it on him as he screamed at the heart of it, feeding it on wrath and sky until even the shadow of Spade's ghost had been burned away. Only then did she drop her flame, breathing hard and swaying on her feet. Squallow moved without thinking, was at her side before he'd even realized that he'd decided to be there. "Boss," he said softly into the shocked silence after that, as people began to stir and look at each other, stunned expressions asking, "Did that just happen?" Xanthus didn't seem to hear him. She was staring at the place Spade, whatever he had been, had disappeared from, and Squallow didn't know what the blank expression on her face meant. Before he could figure out what he should say, the Cervello's spokeswoman said, completely unnecessarily, "The missed battle cannot be held, and the trial of the rings must be concluded. We pronounce the winner to be Xanthus of the Vongola." That shook people out of their stupors, all right. Xanthus's shoulders went stiff, and she turned to look first at the Cervello, and then beyond them, to the people who'd stood behind Enrico, and watched the trials unfold. None of them, not Frederico's guardians, or the Ninth's guardians, or the Ninth himself, standing at the heart of his people and being supported by Steferi and Martelli, seemed to know what to say or do next. The old man's face was bleached of color. He looked terrible, racked by grief and horror, and stared back silently. The Cervello, apparently satisfied that they discharged their duty, turned as one and slipped away. From the corner of his eye, Squallow saw Lusuria flashing more hand signals at the others. They formed up around Xanthus, settling in at her flanks and back, as she and her putative father stared at each other. She was the one who broke their deadlock. "If you send the Vendicare or anyone else after me now that I actually have killed one of your sons," she rasped, "I tell you right now that they will not take me alive, and I won't sell my life cheap either." The Ninth opened his mouth, but for once he didn't seem to have anything to say. Squallow wasn't sure that there was anything he could say, now or ever. That just left it up to someone else to step in, now that Xanthus had gone quiet again. He touched Xanthus's shoulder. "Come on, boss," he said. "Let's go home." Xanthus glanced at him, nodded, and the eight of them turned as one unit. No one tried to stop them as they walked away.